Hello, podcast listeners. This episode you're about to listen to is from the 2022 Be More Digital Conference. If you like what you hear, why not join us at the 2023 conference? It is going to be held on the 9th of March 2023 at the Novotel London West Hotel. We would just love to see you there. Visit charitydigital.org.uk for more information on all things digital. Enjoy.
I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Alex, Janine, and also Helen as well. And we're going to be talking about how, over the last couple of years, these three charities have achieved some incredible things with digital, which have been really hard won, despite it being a global state of emergency. And I know they've got some fantastic stories to tell. And they're going to be reflecting on their learnings, and by doing that, helping us look to the future too. So let's begin at the beginning and let's talk about some of those big takeaways from this massive learning curve the three of you have been on over the last couple of years. So Helen, can we start with you? Can we hear about what's your big takeaway from all the digital progress your organisation has made during the pandemic?
My big takeaway would be about data and data for proving our impact and our evidence, and data also then for developing our services for our beneficiaries. So I think we've talked about this. We talked about this a couple of years ago at a similar conference. I think my big takeaway, my big piece of advice to anybody would be, don't do digital for the sake of doing digital. Have a very clear reason for doing it. And for us, it was about data and being able to have data that proved our impact.
Absolutely. We've all heard this morning as well already about how data is just so critical to measuring what you're doing and monitoring your impact.
Absolutely.
And making decisions as well. So Janine, can I bring you in here? And I know there have been some real achievements that you've made using data and also wider aspects of digital. Can you tell us a bit about your big takeaway from the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's very similar to Helen's in, like, don't do digital because you want to do digital. So for us, it was very much about, we wanted to think about the experience of being a carer and what that meant and how carers came into our organisation and experienced our organisation, right from kind of joining us through to the experience of being part of our services, and to make that experience the best that it could be to enable them to achieve the goals that we wanted them to achieve. So it's very much about putting users at the heart of what we were doing and then thinking about how digital could improve that experience, which some of it was front end in terms of things like websites and how we could improve that online journey, but a lot of it was about kind of back end and how we could actually improve the efficiencies of our organisation so that more of our staff could be out on the front line actually talking to and delivering services to carers. So it's very much don't do digital for the sake of doing it. For us, it was about that user experience. And I think the other big takeaway was, because a lot of what we were doing was kind of like back end, a big takeaway and learning point was how much it was about cultural change and how much, you know, yes, we're on a digital transformation journey, but our biggest asset in our organisation is always going to be our staff. That's never going to change. And it's about how do we take staff on this journey of digital transformation so that they recognise the benefits they can engage in, they have the skills to engage in what we're doing, and they have the time and the resource in order to do what we're looking to do. And I think there's a big piece that, I'll be honest, we missed at the start of our journey that then we recognised we had to add in about how we make sure that we're all going on this journey together.
Thank you, Janine. And I think that's such an important point, isn't it? Thinking about users first, but also your internal users in the form of your staff. And speaking of being user first, inclusion has obviously been such a huge challenge during the pandemic with all the digital adoption that Jonathan was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. What are your takeaways about that, Alex?
I think one of the big takeaways is that we work an awful lot with volunteers, and it's about getting the volunteers, persuading the volunteers to take new roles on. So, for example, you know, when the pandemic hit, we had lots of calls from people going, I have no idea how to get priority shopping from whatever supermarket they want to go to. So our volunteers weren't changing ink cartridges or weren't trying to fix internet issues as they normally do. that what they were trying to do was trying to make sure that Mr. Johnson could get his weekly shop okay and his bread and his milk before it got sold out. So it was trying to improve and change the skill set of our volunteers. And our volunteers, to a man or a lady, actually were fantastic. We couldn't have done anything without our volunteers, and I don't think volunteers actually realise how important they are to an organisation. Yes, of course, it's great to get paid, but actually, it's even better to give your free time. So I think the volunteers need to take a lot of kudos away.
I love that point, Alex, because you're so right. If you've got that dependency on volunteers, they can actually be a real driver of digital transformation, yep. Can't they?
Sure.
Lovely. Great. So some really amazing reflections there from the last couple of years. Perhaps now if we look to the future and we think about where the three of you are going to be going next digitally. So obviously this is a really challenging time, as we all know, with the rising cost of living, war in the Ukraine and so many other things going on. How are the three of you setting your digital ambitions for the next couple of years? What do you want to achieve? Shall we start with you, Janine?
Yeah, so I suppose it's much the same, really, for us. It's about how can we really improve the experience of carers and make sure that they're achieving the goals, that we're meeting their needs, essentially. They're achieving the goals that we've set as an organisation. So there's a lot about how we connect kind of what we're doing at the back end with our kind of CRM and how we're developing that with our website and what opportunities does that unlock. In terms of maybe a portal they could access or what might we be able to use AI for around kind of like a chatbot or something like that. And also how we can integrate with other organisations so that we could maybe share data more effectively, be that just at a trend level or be that actually in sharing data about kind of users so we can support them more effectively. So we're not an island supporting carers in our area on our own. There are lots of agencies that do that and that touch carers in different ways. So how can we integrate and work together most effectively? But I think for me, the cornerstone of anything we do going forward is, what do users need? Do they need a portal? If they don't, then I'm not interested. Do they need a chatbot? If they don't, it's not on the agenda. I think it has to be driven by what do they need and how are we going to deliver that with tech?
Absolutely, and constantly trying to get that information as well. That's half the battle, isn't it? And Alex, what are your organisation's ambitions for the next couple of years?
I think, you know, since the pandemic, we've realised that an awful lot of people aren't digitally connected, and being digitally connected is essential. And we're working with a lot of organisations and companies now on projects such as the Connecting You project and such as the Disability Lifeline project, where companies are giving tablets and computers to end users via organisations. And it's about working in collaboration with different organisations. You know, historically, they were our clients, and we were quite possessive about them being our clients. But we discovered that, actually, sometimes we don't have that expertise in certain parts, but there's a charity over there who's got that experience, or a charity over there has got that knowledge. And I think it's all about collaboratively working. And as you just said, you know, no charity is an island, is it?
100%, and I'm sure we're going to all be hearing a lot more to say about those partnerships, whether they're with peer organisations or tech companies or funders, or whoever it might be, to drive more change as digital adoption accelerates further. Mm. And Helen, let's hear about your ambitions for the next couple of years.
This is the scary but exciting point. So our digital ambitions for the next couple of years sit absolutely squarely with our organisational objectives. So our objectives are very much around reaching more children and reaching more children and young people that face participation barriers in terms of learning outside of school. I don't think Well, it probably could, but I'm going to say I don't think going forward it can get any worse than it's been. We work primarily with schools and we work in the extracurricular space, and we had a huge, long period of times where there was no school and therefore there was no extracurricular space. And at one point we thought we were going to go under completely. But we've managed to go from being an entirely paper-based scheme to creating a digital platform which has survived COVID. In fact, it's done better than survived COVID. So we have around about 110,000 children that participate in our programmes. As of yesterday, I think 46,000 of those were using that digital platform. And we are currently partway through building an individual subscription platform, which will basically turn us from being an organisation that currently is accessible to some children and young people to being one that is open to all children and young people that can access a device of some sort somewhere. So we're partly the way through building that. Hopefully it will be up and running by December. And that for us will be, fingers crossed, a game changer in terms of our impact. Also in terms of our kind of social impact factor, in that we are going to gift a lot of subscriptions to that platform, but also potentially financially for the organisation, because I think it will take around about 7,000 subscriptions to completely cover all our current core cost expenditure. So that's where we're heading. So scary.
But very exciting.
Exciting,
ambitions.
But really, really scary at the same time.
Well, we wish you well with that. And I think what we've heard from you, Helen, and the three of you together is that those amazing stories of digital progress, but also about resilience and how you've innovated during this time. And just before we go to some questions, I'd love to hear what your one piece of advice would be for all of the organisations in the room here today. So can we start with you, Rance?
Sure. My one piece of advice is training and working with the people that support end users is so important. I always say to people, it's a bit like having this amazing electric guitar and not having a clue how to play it. You've got to get training, and if it needs someone to show the end user what to do, that's got to be great. It's no good going to the end user, here you go, here's a tablet, bye. Because they're going to go, I have no idea what to do with it. And it's about making sure that people have got the right equipment and the right support.
Absolutely, that training point and skills is so key, isn't it? And Janine, what's your big takeaway?
I think it's probably, it doesn't matter if you don't get it right. We made so many mistakes. So many things I would have done differently if I did the journey again over the last 2 years. But that's just all been things that we've learned from as an organisation, that has meant we can do it differently next time, that we can be kind of braver and bolder, kind of like stepping out. So, yeah, maybe be brave and don't worry if you don't get it right.
Be brave and don't worry. I love that. And test, learn and improve. You can't have that without failing sometimes along the way, can you? And it's got its own value. Lovely. And then Helen, what's your one piece of advice for everyone in the room today?
Just reiterating what's been said, really, I would say be bold and be brave. But there's a caveat to that. So be bold. I sit here as a middle-aged technophobe, and I've been very bold, and I've argued with our trustees around digital and getting them to understand why we're doing it. Be brave. We are a team of five, and we punch well above our weight, and none of us have got any real digital knowledge, but we are extremely brave. But with that, I would say absolutely never lose sight of that vision. Digital and tech stuff can be very distracting. You know, people come along and go, you could do this and you could do that and it'll be fantastic, and blah, blah, blah. And you can get really carried away. So just have your North Star, which is your vision and your aims and objectives, and just never, ever detract from that.
Amazing advice to end on. Be bold, be brave, and focus on your North Star. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So on that note, we're going to move to some Q&A, and I believe Claire's
yes.
got some questions for us.
We've actually got some Q&A, some questions on Slido, so thank you, everybody, for using that. But also, if you want to ask your your question IRL in real life, please raise your hand so that we can get a mic to you. But I'll start with a question that got upvoted three times on Slido, which is for Janine, actually. How do you convince the higher level, in brackets the board, of the organisation to value the need in order to prioritise development implementation of tech and changes instead of what they think is needed?
By telling them what the users need. And so for us, it was all about putting the user at the centre. So we did spend a lot of time, to be honest, on user research, probably longer than the board wanted. But it really enabled us to show kind of what the need was and where the need was and how the tech solutions would deliver against that need. And I think also we did a little bit around prototyping. So just doing like really small pilots and user testing with those prototypes so that we could then go back to the board and be like, well, we have tested this, we've tested this with our users and this is what they think of it and this is why this is what we want to do long term.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Anybody wants to speak up or should I keep going with technology? This is a digital charity. Teddy from Cordial Credit has had four upvotes. This is not a popularity contest, but still. A thought based on Helen's statement, don't use data just for the sake of using data, use it with a clear purpose, I think is what you said. And the question is, how do you ensure that data is collected and used without doubt, only for the benefit of your beneficiaries and not exploited in any way that could be detrimental?
It's a really good question. Obviously, we work with children and young people, and that data is precious. Obviously, the data that reaches us is anonymised, so we can't exploit it, and we wouldn't use that in any way to, you know, allow that to be exploited. Our data really is, and the data that we're interested in, is around geography, so looking at regional disparities. It's around looking at where those children are in schools in terms of what type of schools those children are in terms of kind of socioeconomic need, etc. And for us, it's very much about categories of learning and skills development. So it's not information about any particular child, it is that collective information, and for us it's about being able to aggregate that information at a local, regional and national level. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely.
Good.
Fantastic. No live questions. I have a question for Davinder, from Davinder, saying, you know, which I think is a great one, actually. We've heard that, you know, obviously you should be driven by your user needs, but how do you help users and other stakeholders understand the universe of possibilities, understand what's possible so that they can realise the potential of digital beyond their immediate needs?
I think it's about... firstly, it's about working out what they want to do and making suggestions about what they want to do. You know, sometimes people have really low requirements. And I know it sounds silly, I know you've got to aim high, but people might say, all I want to do is find puppy videos on YouTube. If that's all they want to do, that's amazing. Because everyone likes puppy videos, don't they? But if that's what they want to do, that's fabulous. You know, and I think it's about trying to engage them and trying to give them stuff that they're going to want to do, but also being user-led. We don't want them to do certain things. We would much rather go out and say, what do you want to do? What do you find enjoyable? Because if it's enjoyable, the engagement is so much higher.
Yeah, I think I'd just add a little bit to that as well. It's absolutely being user-led. And I think it's about what Alex said. It's about what do people need? And then you can kind of, you can use things like prototypes, or which doesn't have to be something that you make. It could be something that you draw or something that you explain to them. Like, so if you need this, what about if we gave it to you like that? Which can help them understand what the possibilities out there are. But it's, put their needs first.
Can I just pick up on that as well? Because we work with schools. We work with around about 1,000 schools, and schools, bless them, are, you know, they have all sorts of systems thrown at them that they have to use. You know, they are under the cosh of the Department for Education and Ofsted, and, you know, under an awful lot of pressure. And there is nothing like working with schools who turn around and go, well, we don't want that. Why would we use that? You're just adding something else to everything that we have to do, you know. And actually it was, you know, we've had to take them on that journey of, you know, well, what could you use it for? What benefits might you want to get out of it? You know, what would you like to do with it? And actually, if that's all you want to do with it, you know, as you said, Alex, that's fine. We'll work with you to enable you to do that. And it's then been a kind of slow kind of process of actually them being able to see the impact of the data, the reports that they can pull off, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so, yeah, slowly but surely.
Fantastic. We have a question here, a big question about funding. Because obviously great tech can be expensive. Tech people, tech employees can be very expensive. Do you feel funders are ready to support that tech journey that charities do need to go on?
Shall I pick up on that? Our digital platform in total, the bit that is up and running at the moment cost around about 100,000, I think. And that was funded primarily. I think we used about 30,000 of our charity's reserves that we had, and that was the challenge of persuading the trustees to get behind it. The rest was funded by external funders. The bit that we're building at the moment is around about, I want to say around about 46,000, 47,000. Again, that's been in the main. I think about 40 of that's been externally funded. And we're also building an additional bit, which again is around about 45, and that's been externally funded. So yes, is the answer to the question.
We have, I think we've time for a couple more questions. Anybody in the room? Oh, there's one here.
Hello, Sarah Ruff here from Polka Children's Theatre. It's just a kind of, I guess, extension of that last question and just something that you said earlier around kind of allowing things to fail or don't worry if it doesn't work. And I was just thinking about from, you know, working for a relatively small charity and how we, you know, we want to do things better with digital and tech and we do invest a lot of time in it. And obviously things don't always work out. And how do you kind of, I guess, at what point do you draw the line and what point do you continue to invest in it and continue to let people kind of go through that process of trial and error and experimentation before you kind of get it right, if that makes sense?
Janine? That's a really good question. I'm not sure I have a full answer for you, I'm going to be honest. I think for us, it's about knowing what you want to achieve, so knowing what the kind of what's going to measure your success. So what are you looking to do? So that's one thing, and the other is about starting small, to kind of like take those steps. Because I think if you say you're going to create a website which has 75 pages, which are all full of text, and it's going to deliver X, and then it doesn't, you've spent a lot of time delivering it. Whereas if you say we're going to try one page that does this, and we're going to see what difference displaying it like this does for our users or doing this is going to have, or we're going to try one campaign on social media for a week that's going to do this, and we're going to have these kind of KPIs to see if it's got success, that's where you can get that kind of trial and error. And it's like, okay, well, it didn't work, but you know, we only spent a week doing it, or we only spent 2 weeks, rather than we've employed someone, we've got funding that we told the funder we were going to deliver 20 social media campaigns over the next year, and actually that's not what our users need. What are we going to do? So I think for me it was about that kind of, I guess you call it starting small or prototyping or, you know, whatever word you want, but for me that's how we've tried to do it. Not necessarily always effectively, I will also say that.
Just to add to that, I think going into this can be like the big place where things can go wrong. So we went into knowing that we wanted to create this digital platform and went, you know, out to tender, talked to a load of agencies, and actually I would say listen to other people. Our trustees said, actually, we want you to have the possibility for a break clause. So in between working out what it's going to look like and the design and the feasibility and building it, have a break clause so you can walk away from one agency and take it to another agency if necessary. And I am so glad they did, because it just went horribly wrong with the first agency. You know, they got completely carried away. The costs were ballooning, etc., and we were able to walk away and take that somewhere else. And then I think and it's difficult. You know, we're only classed as a small charity. You know, our income's about 250,000 a year, something like that. So we have taken some really bold decisions. One of which was when we got this platform up and running, we started getting messages from schools and our local managers saying, we're not going to use it because there's this particular blocker. And we just had to go, I literally just had to go, do you know what, I'm taking money out of that budget and I'm putting it in that bit, because we just need to make it happen and we just need to take that blocker away. And you know, sometimes you've just got to do that. And I can't remember what got sacrificed that year, but something got sacrificed to the tune of about £6,000, but it just had to happen.
Please join me in giving a huge round of applause to our panelists and moderator for a great panel.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast and found this content helpful and want to attend the 2023 conference, you can register your interest on the website today.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.